The rule of three states, things that come in threes, are inherently more appealing than those that don't. With the next generation GMC Sierra, Canyon, and Sierra Heavy Duty, we couldn't agree more. Whether you choose to have the world's first six-function multi-pro tailgate, available only on the next generation GMC Sierra SLT, AT4, and Denali models, to confidently take on heavy loads with the available 6.6-liter V8 Duramax turbo diesel in the GMC Sierra Heavy Duty, or to get behind the wheel of the only midsize premium pickup on the road, the GMC Canyon, you'll realize all three help you do one thing. Go professional grade. Step up to GMC and get 20% below MSRP on next generation 2019 GMC Sierra Double Cab and SLE Crew Cab models with a traditional tailgate. We are professional grade. GMC. Offer includes price reduction below MSRP and purchase allowance. Not available with special financing, lease, and some other offers. Take retail delivery by 9/3/19. See participating dealer for details.
Hi, this is Tony Ruggiero, the Dew Sweeper. You're about to listen to an episode of The Tour Coach, which is going to give you an inside look at coaching golf at the very highest level, from on the PGA Tour with my guys all the way to here at Mobile, Alabama in the Dew Sweeper Dome, as we help folks of all skill levels, all walks of life, learn to achieve their golfing goals.
Welcome back to the Tour Coach Podcast. My name is Cordy Walker, and you join us for a really fun episode. You are at Halliard's Steakhouse on St. Simon's Island, Georgia. We've just spent a long day out at Frederica working on a bunch of different projects, and we've got some great folks sitting around the dinner table tonight. We have myself, your other host, Tony Ruggiero. You have Jackson Court, who works with Tony at Frederica, and you have Tom Lovelady, one of the students that Tony's worked with for a really long time. He played on the PGA Tour last year. Actually just lost his PGA Tour card, unfortunately. And so he's right now in this phase of working on his game and getting back out there. And we have a conversation about just how difficult golf really is and what it's like to play it for a living. You're going to enjoy this, and I hope you enjoy the atmosphere, because you're going to hear a lot of the sights and sounds of what it's like to have dinner here at Halliard's after a long day out at the golf course. Let's get into it.
All right, so we're sitting here at one of my favorite places on the island, Halliard's. The only thing that upsets me about tonight's dinner is that I have a $250 gift card for Halliard's sitting in Mobile.
I wonder if they'll compensate.
You think I could have it FedExed in?
If you sweet talk them, you might have a chance.
So lots of people, that it's easy to go on a podcast or easy to go on social media, talk about all the shit, you know, when guys are playing good. But, like, golf's hard. Sometimes you work hard and guys don't play good. You didn't get to keep your card last year. Doesn't mean we didn't work hard.
Right.
But let's talk about how golf's hard, and now the work we're doing, the work you've done, you're kicking ass, getting back, and the plans to get you back to the tour. I think that's an interesting insight. It's like, I mean, Jackson, I mean, Cordy, like, but, like, everybody, it's easy to, like, oh, yeah, guys playing great. But, like, shit, sometimes guys playing good and you do a lot of hard work and it doesn't work out.
Yeah, to your average viewer, they're watching.
Listener.
Yeah, or listener, but just any lover of golf. When they're watching golf on TV, all you see is the guys in the top 10, top 15. And guys up there are somewhat consistent. I mean, you know, just the best guys in the world, you know, playing well that week, whatever, and what a lot of people don't see are the guys finishing T21, T22, you know, the occasional is the wrong word, but just guys finishing in the top 10 and having a good week, and, you know, people seeing their name and thinking it's like, oh, okay, you know, he played well that week, and not thinking anything of it. And you can put a lot of work into it, and you it's your way to make a living. So, it's sometimes it's hard when you're struggling and you feel like you're putting in a lot of hard work and it's not paying off, and sometimes you can't see a light at the end of the tunnel, especially when you're down, and that gets really frustrating.
What do you do to keep going and to remain focused when things aren't going?
You just have to keep doing your thing. I mean, you couldn't have said it better. Golf is hard. The golf ball doesn't know how much work you're putting in. All the golf ball knows is what you're doing to it. And you can give it your all and get nothing out of it. And then there's other people in the world that are just fortunate enough to maybe not put as much into it as you are, Not saying that they're not putting a lot into it, but they get a lot more out of it than you do. So the golf ball doesn't know how much you're working, how little you're working, whatever, which can be frustrating. But, you know, when you've been at the top for a little bit and then you lose it all, it just makes you want to get back there so much more.
So one thing, and I want y'all to chime in too, but one thing that I find remarkable about Tom is that it would be very easy for a guy to come out of college, get his PGA Tour card, play for a couple years, lose his tour card, and decide that he needs to change everything around him, that it's got to be somebody else's fault, it's got to be, I need more information. We've all seen it. Tom, in my opinion, has done the exact opposite. He's been like, okay, I need to even do a better job or more of what I do, right? Don't you think? I mean, I think that, and that's different than a lot of people, though. You've seen a bunch of them out there.
And that's what we've talked about this week is how many players, like you said, you don't see the light at the end of the tunnel, so you just switch tunnels almost and start over by finding, you know, switching everything. And how many friends have you had that went down that path and struggled?
Yeah, and you can even go as far to say not only switching swing coaches or switching quote-unquote teams, but a total switch of equipment.
Right.
And sometimes that's almost worse because I've seen guys go from having, you know, one club, you know, one specific company sponsoring them, and then they go somewhere else. Well, money from one side to another is not worth the transition unless – the results come. If you're switching from one company to another solely for the money, that's a terrible decision.
I agree. 100%.
That's something we hear from Mac all the time talk about. Performance first.
Some of that has to do with agents, and that's you know, somewhat a shame on them for putting their player in that situation. Because when you switch equipment and you never, you know, but I'm not going to say any names, but say you've been using, you know, equipment A for 10 years. It's all you know it's reliable, you know what you're going to get. Well, equipment B is offering a little bit more, you know, enough to have your interest, but nothing life-changing. And you get a little pressure to switch to B. Well, you've never used it, you have no confidence with it, you have no experience with it. You know, how are you expected to perform? So, in my opinion, you should stick with what got you there. Because you got there once, you know you can get there again. And if you find something along the way that maybe, you know, can help you a shot around or two shots a tournament, fine. But going overboard, switching teams, switching equipment is very, very excessive.
We hadn't talked a bunch on the podcast on Tour Coach about equipment. But I think it's kind of interesting. Like, I think the average golfer doesn't realize, oh, it's not that big a deal to change clubs or whatever. But for you guys, like, you guys are creatures of habit when it comes to equipment, especially, I think. I mean, some people are probably better at changing equipment than others. But, like, the other thing I don't think they realize is the temptation to change equipment every week. If you're a guy out there that's young and you're struggling, to me it seems like the equipment people know who the hell you are. And they tend to flock around you like, oh, try this driver, try this shaft, try this wedge, try this putter.
Yeah, it's such a blessing in that you have the ability to try anything you want with any combination of grip, shaft, head, any brand, any literally anything.
Anything in the golf world you have access to every week.
And the ones that stick with what got them there, stick with your roots, stick with what you know, are the ones that, you know, at the end of the week, end of the year, will remain. And obviously that's assuming that they, you know, play well and have a good year. You know, there's plenty of guys that stick with what they know and just didn't play well. That's totally different. But, you know, the guys that are playing well and trying to switch around, it just gets very inconsistent.
Just to add a little color commentary, we just received a really nice wedge salad over there. We've got some crab bisque for Jackson. This is great. We got fresh bread, butter, color commentary. So my question is, though, like, how do you know that you won't putt better if you do that next best thing? How do you know that you won't drive it farther if you do go get that new Like,
that's a good question.
Right?
That's very fair.
That's where we're all getting pitched.
Right. But like, so...
So there's a study on a new company's driver, right? The ball speed improvement from last model to this current model was from 0.6 miles an hour to 1.5 miles an hour. Like, which is what? Couple yards to like 5-6 yards max. Like, a lot of that stuff is marketing, right? Like, yes, I understand technology improves and I understand things
maybe
change.
I need a marketing department.
But like, I don't think I'm one of those guys where like, if it ain't broke, why fix it? And I understand like playing to strengths and all that stuff. I don't know what you think about that, Tom.
So we're talking about sticking with the plan and what that. I'm just going to be devil's advocate over here for a little while.
Sure.
What about like adding a new putting coach to the team or getting a short game guy to come in?
Yeah, that's different from equipment though, right?
Sure.
And I think like that's why golf is hard, is because there's so many moving pieces. I think you eliminate and make golf off the course easy, right? Like, you have a good home life, your travel life is good and all that stuff. Then you have to balance the play from long game to short game and all that other stuff and equipment and coaches.
Yep.
Right. So,
well, just maybe I'll challenge again. So Tom has a new putter in the bag. He's putting it great.
It's
a
great putter. How good is he rolling that thing?
It's a new putter, right? He switched recently.
Right.
I mean, does that go against what we were just talking about, or how does that fit in?
It does and it doesn't. It does because stick with what got you there, which I totally am for, with the exception that my putting has been a little bit stale. There's confidence, but I hate to say fake confidence. It's just like, oh, you know, it's going to turn around. But just statistically, it's been fairly stale. And putting this new putter in my bag, I can line it up super easy. The putter swings itself. It rolls end over end every time. So all I have to do is just match speed and line. I know that what I'm doing with it is great. Putter is
typically you don't change often.
I don't. No.
No.
No. I've.
Okay.
I don't. As a matter of fact, I ended my ping contract early in the season this past, or in the 2019 season, to go back to a specific Scotty Cameron that I'd been using for 10 to 12 years.
Right.
That's how much a creature of habit he is.
So I used that putter all through junior golf, all through college golf, amateur golf, and I'll leave that there. But even if you were to switch drivers, so you go from one company to another, well, one company's head model spins this way as to where another company's model spins more or less. And then when you start mixing spin, that can create more side spin. You know, if it works better for you, it creates less side spin and goes straighter. But that gets really tricky because then you start switching shafts, you start switching different heads. There's so many more variables as to a putter. It's length, lie, loft, and do you want a mallet or a blade? That's pretty simple. And I fortunately had enough time to mess around before competitive golf to see if I wanted to test it, if I wanted to put it in play. So I think the putter, I think everything but woods is very easy to test because you already know what iron shafts you use. So you already know all of your specs in that regard as to where if you were to go with the woods, you start changing spin and all of that. So yes, it goes against what I said, but for a good reason, in my opinion.
You mentioned irons, and there's probably people out there going to jump on me, but like, to me, irons haven't changed a great deal, right?
I mean, I tell people this all the time. You get the best set of irons from each company. Generally speaking, they're all the same. You just have to pick a set which fits your eye.
Yep.
And what feels good to you. You can get a set from Ping, TaylorMade, Callaway, Titleist, Srixon, Mizuno,
and whatever.
So
they
on
all
and
make good
so
irons.
On and so forth. You get, say you're looking for blade irons. They all make blade irons. You get a blade iron from each of them. You know that you use this specific shaft. You're testing the same specs that you play, and all you want to do is find what looks good to you and feels good to you and what works for you. They're all the exact same.
I agree with that.
They are.
That's why I don't think guys get off when guys change equipment. Other than, you remember when Corey Pavin went to those VAS Cleveland irons that looked like this glass on the end of a shaft, but that's different. But Like, but most part, guys don't change irons and get real messed up. It comes when they do the drivers and the and wedges are a big deal. Wedges are a big deal.
Wedges can be a big deal, but I think nothing's more important than the golf ball.
Let's talk about the golf ball.
And I'm not going to say any company, but I know guys that have switched from company A to company B and have completely fallen off of what they are capable of doing. And I know that switching a ball is, in my opinion, a much more difficult transition than any club. Because, without saying any names, yeah, I have firsthand seen players switch from company A to company B, and they're not even... I know when they tee it up that week that they're out. I know that it's not even close. And even firsthand, I played in the Canadian Open 2 years ago with a guy that's fresh out of college, a quote-unquote world beater in college, and you know, going to have a quote-unquote... no problem playing professional golf. Well, all through college, he plays brand A. Well, in round one of the tournament, he plays brand B because that's...
who's paying him.
That's who's paying him. And that's what his agent wants him to play because the agent gets more money. So he plays ball B and shoots himself out of making the cut. He plays ball A, which is probably not great for his contract, but... He plays ball A in the second round, and
wow, this is big.
Yeah, and I mean, it is so noticeably different. Breaks par, plays great, has a great round, just really just gets it around the course, and I understood what the hype around this kid was. He has continued to have to play ball B, has played, he made it through Q school for the Korn Ferry Tour last year, I believe. And I want to say he finished outside the 100. And it's just kind of a shame that agents put pressure on these young kids to switch for the money.
Well, and I think we've had Mac on the podcast before, and we're all good friends with Mac. And he has a valid point, I think, that, like, one of the problems with the industry is that agents shouldn't be paid on the contracts because – it's in their best interest, the agent, to push you into changing something that may not be best for you to change, right? Because they only get paid, right? Whereas, like, I know, and it's interesting, like, he talks about, like, hey, agents should get paid somehow based on how the player performs, not on what contracts they negotiate. Because really, and it's the same way to me with teaching and coaching, like, you know, there's guys that charge a percentage of this, percentage of that. Like, I've always said, like, if you don't keep your card, I shouldn't get a dollar because, like, I didn't do my job, right? Like, you know, I mean, we're all in this together. We're a team. And I just think that, like, if you get what he said about agents, they that some of them in particular, a couple, one maybe more than others, like, drive me crazy because, like, I think it's all about being transactional. And it's just about, like, okay, if I can get them a deal or a contract, I make 20% of that deal. Whereas, like, you know what? Sometimes adding, and it's not even just equipment, though. Sometimes giving you a deal where you got to go do 20 more days isn't best for you.
Oh, horrible.
Right? Like, the 20 days might be better to rest or to come work on your game at Frederica and we hang out. Like, it might be better for you long term than going and doing an outing. So it's not just equipment. I mean, sometimes, I mean, business, the whole business side of golf, people don't understand, like, you know, and the agent side of it, it's screwed up. I've pissed a bunch of agents off tonight anyway, so that's good.
Interesting anecdote. Back to the golf ball, some lighthearted chat. It was pretty funny today. We were out shooting some stuff and
oh, this ball, we're not gonna talk about this one.
I don't mind saying that. So this company sent me some of their balls, Cut Golf, and I had them in my golf bag. We grabbed them.
You're gonna lose your sponsorship for this.
They hit them to me. They sent them to review. They sent them, this is the review, and we honestly saw the wind hit the ball way more than you're hitting a Pro V1 before.
Yeah, I play a Titleist Pro V1.
Okay, so you hit the Pro V1, you hit two of those. The wind didn't hit it that bad, and you hit two of these balls, and the same thing happened. The wind took it, and it went right over there. It was like it was night and day, and it was crazy. I had never seen it that straightforward as we did.
The wind moved it significantly.
The sound of it. How different was the sound?
The sound, and which indirectly made the feel not what I'm used to, and then the distance. Both of those balls probably went roughly 8 yards shorter than the balls that I play now. And even on putts, I mean, it's just really funny how, going back to what I was saying about the golf ball and about the guy that switched from A to B, how a golf ball in the littlest of shots can make the biggest of difference.
When I think of golf as hard, like I hear that, I think more about balancing your game.
Sure.
Right, like, and I haven't spent a ton of time, right, balancing your game. So, like, I haven't spent a ton of time watching you play on course. I've seen you hit enough. Your game is complete from head to toe.
Sure.
But that doesn't mean when you tee it up for 4 days that you've got all of those things firing on all cylinders. So how do you manage?
Are you saying, like, how do you get tournament ready?
How do you get tournament ready? But how do you also, like, balance, okay, I've got to prepare my driver, I've got to prepare my irons, I've got to prepare my short game, my putting.
Right.
Week in, week out when you travel. That's, sure. To me, that's golf is hard.
Sure. So
how do you do it?
Certain weeks, certain things are clicking better than others.
Okay.
Certain weeks, I'm driving it great and
hammering
and chipping it great. You know, irons are a little suspect, but I'm chipping it good. So, you know, I'm kind of getting around. Well, then you'll spend that time working on putting, whether you're missing 3-footers, 8-footers, lag putts aren't great. That's where you use that time, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. What you struggled with the week before, just to make it, you can't, it's hard to get 2 steps better in a week. You just have to slowly progress. And sometimes you have to go 2 steps backward to take 1 step backward to take 2 steps forward. So just say I played Pebble Beach this past week. I hit 61% of my fairways. I hit 66% of my greens. Up and downs were at 38%. And that would kind of skew my putting stats a little bit. Well, that shows me that I'm hitting it great. Putting could be good just based off statistics, but chipping has either not been great. Well, I either could be short-side myself and not getting up and down, or I'm just not hitting basic chip shots well. So that kind of goes into some strategy into, all right, pins on the right, I have 7-iron. I am in no world ever going to take this pin on. I'm going to hit it 15 feet left, give myself a chance every time. That eliminates bogey, or I'm around the green, you know, I'm in the bunker on a par 5, got a simple bunker shot to get up and down for birdie, hit a bad shot. Okay, well, I'm going to practice bunker shots next week. I'm going to practice the basic shots that you just typically practice. And whatever you failed the past week, you're just going to try to practice a little bit to get a little bit better for that following week. And 3 weeks later, you got everything clicking. You win or you finish top 5. You know, you have a solid week.
I think it's always variable, right? Yeah. Like, it's always changing. Yes. You can never say, like, this is how I get tournament ready is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's
agreed.
Like, it's always different, right?
And it's cool to see, like, it was awesome to see his putting routine, right? So, like, that's kind of your baseline putting routine. Do you have that stuff for a short game, for full swing, for driver, all that stuff?
In practice or routine?
Both.
Routine, I try to have the same routine. Every iron, I have the same routine, every wedge, so on and so forth. I try to keep everything consistent in that category. So if I get nervous, I can back off, and I've done this routine 1,000 times. I know what I'm going to do. Practice-wise, practice can also vary, like I just said, depending on what you're struggling on.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can 155 9-iron, solid 9-iron, driving range 9-iron every time. Well, now you have 149. So sometimes you have to get a TrackMan or Flight Scope or whatever, so you can learn how to do, you know, an off-speed shot. Yeah, getting tournament ready is is somewhat of a loaded question.
You can't.
Well, yeah, not necessarily tournament ready, but like seeing his putting routine that you'll see on Golf Science Lab.
Routine is huge.
Right. And so like, okay, do you have, like, so say you, okay, you're talking about stats, whatever. So say you struggle with your irons.
Sure.
What do you go, how do you work on it? How do you maintain, golf is hard. How do you improve that iron part? How do you improve your driving?
It depends if you're
missing. How do you work on it?
It depends if your irons are missing long or short or left or right. If it's missing long or short, then you just need to do some distance work. Figure out how far the ball goes. Figure out what your max is. And if the yardage is outside of the max of the shorter club, take the longer club. And if you're missing left to right, then maybe you're just not swinging specifically great with your irons, and you need to work on some drills.
That's good.
Dinner's here. My last kind of comment question is on that tournament ready concept. Is we were out playing.
We don't have to be done just because food's here, but go ahead.
Sure. And Tom played just like a money match with another tour player that was out at Frederica. And he won the match, played great. Like, he was striping. How much does that help you, or how much more benefit was that match to you than 100%. Like 2 hours or 3 hours on the range, right? Because you go out on the range and you just flush it, right? Like, it's
right.
Our joke is that we're going to make an app of the sounds of your six iron because they're so good.
Right.
Love lady sounds at night.
Well, I sleep to it.
It's a little bit of confirmation that what I'm doing is right, and bits and pieces that, okay, maybe this is paying off, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But if anything, it just gives you confidence. It doesn't matter who you're playing against. Winning is winning, and good golf is good golf. But to play good golf against somebody else who's playing good golf is very satisfying. And,
well, it's just like, it's that idea of that. So one of the concepts is that it's tough to transfer what you work on in the hitting bay out to when you have, you know, some money on the line, right?
Correct.
It's tough. It's hard.
Yeah, and you don't even have to have money on the line, but just knowing that you can't rake another ball to hit another shot.
Right.
You know, you get one shot in that particular shot, and to be able to execute shot after shot and get the ball in the hole and to win the match, money aside, to win the match is great. And going back to what I said earlier about light at the end of the tunnel, it almost gives you light at the end of the tunnel knowing that you're on the right track and what you're doing is good and what you're doing is right, and to trust in what you're doing and just keep doing it.
Like, one of the cool things for me is, so just because the tour schedules and stuff, this is most time Tom and I've just spent together in a long time.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
But it's been, like, to me, it's was a teacher, not only just from the instruction, like, we haven't, like, just sat there and grinded for 2-3 hours. We've done 45 minutes here, 45, whatever, but we've spent a bunch of time on the golf course today. I've had a hell of a time the last 4 days, 5 days. But today I was so glad and excited watching him go through his routine, and I felt so good about what we're doing because, like, everything started on your line today.
Right.
And everything missed on the appropriate side. Like, I thought that was a good day on the golf course today, and your distance control was phenomenal today.
Right. I feel like you and I specifically, when we work on anything, what we work on is try to tighten up start line. If you can,
right.
If you can get the start line started where you want, you can figure out why it's curving too much, right, one way or another. And in our match yesterday and just playing some holes today, start line, you know, couldn't have been better. It was very consistent. It was right where I wanted. And if it started curving one way or another, I knew what I was doing wrong and you know, could make the fix accordingly.
The other thing, tying golf is hard and GSL and Tom Lovelady, all into one, I love the way Tom practices too. All right, so like, I know you like, you're all about how to practice, right? I think Tom's, the way he practices, and right, like, quality over quantity, what he focuses on, what he works on, is impeccable.
Mm-hmm.
I think that 100%. falls into suit with not overdoing it, not overthinking it, not, like, right. Compliment to you, right? Not
totally.
Like, you work hard, and you do it in a manner of time.
Underdone.
You know one of the best things, Jackson?
Let's hear it.
Was almost how few balls Tom hit.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
He stopped and he sat there, which most people would say, like, what are you doing?
Right.
Why aren't you practicing?
no, hit less shots, do them better, and then take a break, and then go back and do it again. Yeah.
But one thing about him, watched him hit balls a long time, every time he hits a ball, he's got a purpose with what he's doing. Yeah. Remember, like yesterday, out of the blue, hold this noodle by my shoulder, right? Every time he's hitting balls, he's trying to work on something. The average golfer could benefit from that. Don't go hit one of those big bags of balls.
Right.
Go hit 15 balls and be really trying to do something with it.
Totally.
And then, like, once you – what I like about T is, like, he goes and when he gets the feel for something, he's like, okay, I got it. I'm like, okay, I got it. Like, I don't need to sit here and, like, just hammer it. Like, I got it. Like, and then he goes on the golf course and tries to do it.
There's definitely a fine line of how many balls are too many balls, in my opinion. In the grand scheme of things, who really wants to go to the range and just whack balls for 3 hours?
People who don't like their wives.
Well.
People are bad at golf like me.
Fair.
That's true, though. I'm not mentioning names, but guys that don't.
True. I'm not going to touch that. But, yeah, I mean.
That was me back in the day.
Fair. But why would you go to the range twice as long as you technically need to? Be efficient with your time. You can save time. And
your body.
100%.
100%.
And like they were saying, I would hit balls. Once I got the feel for it and was confident in what I'm doing, then I just went and sat in the chair. I mean, practicing is... I did. Shit.
And on the foam roller.
Hell yeah.
And on the foam roller, I laid...
He showed me the best foam roller stretch. Have you seen it?
The best foam rolling stretch is to lay down and use the foam roller as a pillow. It's amazing. Yeah, if you do it, it's pretty tough to get up. But, yeah, I mean, shit. Practicing, in my opinion, if you're not working on something technical, if you're just trying to fine-tune and just do your daily stuff, you know, whatever. Once you practice for I practice for confidence. I practice to gain momentum. Once I get confidence in what I'm doing and I know what I'm doing is right and I'm pleased and I see that, you know, I'm getting better at little things, why keep going? Because if you're going to keep going, sometimes you work yourself out of the confidence that you just had.
Like I always say, you can hit balls till you hit it shitty.
Uh-huh. Sure,
Everybody can.
Yeah.
How many times have you gone to the range hitting it good and then, you've seen people hit it really good on the range and they keep hitting and by the time they leave, they're hitting it shitty and then they feel like something's wrong with their swing. They may have just hit too many damn balls.
And then they're pissed.
Right.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Do you think we're going down my rabbit hole right now. I couldn't be more pleased. Do you think there's a difference in practicing for, like, skill acquisition and, like, learning versus practicing for confidence like that?
Mm.
Are they different?
Yes.
We got a strong yes over there.
Yeah. 100%. I agree in that some people need more time. Sometimes it takes people longer to gain momentum or confidence than others. So, player A and player B. Player A is getting it around pretty good, could use a little extra time on his putting. Spends a little extra time on his putting, gets it dialed in. Player B is struggling, just say all around. Well, time spent's going to be different because sometimes you have to put more time in when things aren't going the way you want. Once you have all facets of your game where you're confident and pleased and happy where they're trending, leave. Some people can practice for an hour and they're good to go. Some people can practice for three and they're good to go. So
yeah, I think
it's not the same for everyone.
Well, I think if you're in the process of learning something, right? And I'm gonna use Tom as an example. Like, so we're in the hitting bay and we're filming and we're working on something, and you don't necessarily care where the ball goes, right? It's totally different. He's hitting a shot. Tom and I are looking at video, or we're looking at the swing catalyst, we're looking at whatever, and we really don't care. We don't really give a shit where the ball goes. And we talk in between shots.
Right.
Right? But then once we're like, okay, he knows what he's doing, then I think he switches into the mode where he's trying to gain confidence. And then it's not about how many balls you hit. Like, I think people hit far too many balls in both. Like, I think they're trying to get confidence out of skill acquisition, when skill acquisition ought to be hitting balls, looking at it, analyzing, are you getting better?
and not worrying about where the ball goes. If you're worried about where the ball goes, you should be worried about getting confidence. You're one or the other. Like him and I, so it was in Mobile before we came over here. We did a bunch of filming. He had worked with Eazy-E before. They'd filmed some things. Laughing, him working with Eazy-E.
No, I just thought about Eazy and those.
But you know, we had a real good conversation about what we were going to work on. And so we spent probably an hour and a half working on this one thing. But then once he kind of got it, then it was all about you building confidence, I think.
100%.
But the ones where we were worried about, like, whether he was doing it right or not, or better or not, we really didn't care where the ball went. And I think people confuse that. I think people are trying to change what they're doing, analyzing it, and they're worried about where the ball goes, and you can't do both.
If you're working on something, you should never care where the ball goes, because if you're working on something, then it's going to feel awkward, and it's not going to feel what you're used to, because obviously what you're used to doing is not down the road that you need to go. So you just got to work on getting the club, your body, whatever it may be, where it needs to be, and then the individual should be athletic enough to be able to feel the club face at the bottom and throughout the swing.
In particular, I'm going to bring up one specific example. So in Mobile at the Dome, I'm filming, or, you know, I'm sitting there at the computer, Eazy-E sleeping on his phone in the back. And let's be fair, right?
Swiping on Tinder.
I think he's actually on Hinge now. I think that's the new one.
At least he's swiping right.
And the ladies are looking.
Yeah, but anyways, Tom hits a shot, ball goes like way right. I instantly think, okay, that's a bad one. That's my reaction because I'm watching the ball. And he goes, let's look at that. It was a good one. My left arm was great at the top. He didn't give a shit where the ball went, right?
Right.
He wanted to see that the arm was good. Where he went, right? And that's where I think people get confused, and I think people get off. At first, they're trying to make the mechanics better and make the ball better. You got to do one first and then the other. And then when you're really worried about the ball, you don't care about the other. And that's what I see with him. That's what I see with really good players, that, like, when they're really worried about the ball, like I've been with him at a million tour events, he doesn't care what the mechanics are. All he cares is where the ball goes. When he's with us in a building, he cares about what the mechanics are.
In my opinion, if you're working on something technical, getting your arm, on your backswing, trying to get a little deeper, trying to get your knees to do this, that, you know, whatever you're working on, you're better off hitting balls into a net. Hitting balls into a net and having your swing recorded than you are hitting on a range, because when you start doing technical stuff and hitting balls in a range and caring about where the ball goes, you're toast. So you're better off just hitting, trying to get the stuff in your swing down, trying to get your mechanics down, trying to get what you're working on down. Then when you get it down, then go to the range. And, you know, if the ball's overcutting, then that just means you're leaving the face wide open, but you're doing the mechanics and what you're working on. You're doing everything right. So then just be athletic enough to be able to fix the little things at the bottom of the swing.
Agree 1,000%. Cordy, anything else?
We've got some amazing steaks sitting in front of us right now. This is phenomenal. It's been a great week, guys.
Cheers, guys. First of all, thanks all of y'all for hanging out. TL, thanks for hanging out with me. Jackson, for putting up with us. Cordy, you're the best ever. Even, you know, you got some goofy ideas out there. But still, we're glad.
Even though you wanted us to turn Billy Joel down earlier, it's still fine.
Yeah, which was a huge faux pas. You wanted us to turn the Billy Joel down.
You know, that's why I played for Tips and Sips tonight.
Billy Joel?
Yes. Tips and Sips, Billy Joel.
100%. I will be seeing him Coldplay in 10 days.
What's it mean if you listen to Coldplay? All right. Anyways, another exciting Tour Coach podcast. Good stuff from a good table at Halyard's, one of our favorite places on the island, and some great work down here at Frederica. Guys, peace out.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Tour Coach with Tony Ruggiero. If you enjoyed this, make sure to hit subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you are listening to this podcast. You can stay up to date because we have weekly episodes coming your way with fascinating people in the world of golf instruction at the highest level. Make sure to subscribe and stay tuned. If you want to learn more about Tony, head over to dosweepersgolf.com. to get all the details on what he's up to. Maybe you want to see him, grab a lesson, or go to one of his camps, pick up his book, Lessons from the Legends. You can do that there. If you want to see Tony in action with some videos and other content, head over to golfsciencelab.com/Tony to get more info there. This episode was powered by the Golf Science Lab and was edited, mixed, and produced by Just Hit Published Productions.
There's one thing, if you know about me, if you've listened to the Dew Sweepers, you've come to listen to me talk, is you know I'm big on loyalty. We give 100% here at the Dew Sweepers. We put a lot of emotional investment into everything we do with every one of our players. And the same can be said for our partners and the folks that have been with us for the long haul and helped the Dew Sweepers, help our juniors, help us get to our tour players. And so I want to give a special thanks to our sponsors. Our sponsors are, first and foremost, Buick and our local Buick dealers here around the Southeast, Schrixon Cleveland Golf, who've been with me for over a dozen years, and their belief and support of what we do here with the Dew Sweepers. And lastly, the folks at Vineyard Vines. The folks at Vineyard Vines love what we do with junior golf. They support us on the road. There isn't a better family or group of people that are going to help us look our best, play our best, and have more fun than the folks at Vineyard Vines. So special thanks to our sponsors. Please support those as you get the opportunity. And for more information about any of those, check us out at dewsweepersgolf.com, or you can always check me out on Instagram at the Dew Sweeper.